it can be kind of hard because not all of those grains necessarily have good bread baking qualities, but...
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Listen to Rootstock Radio every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on WEFT Community Radio. Coming up next is In the Know, a WEFT-produced public affairs show that highlights locally available resources. Stay with us after that for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7, Monday Night R&R at 8, live local music on WEFT Sessions at 10, and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901 at 11. We're going to get to some underwriting, and then we're going to get to In the Know.
This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Green Yoga Spa. Green Yoga Spa brings relaxation to Champaign-Urbana. Green Yoga Spa offers massage, including personal, deep tissue, couples, and prenatal. They also offer Thai yoga therapy, personal yoga instruction, nutritional coaching, Reiki, reflexology, naturopathic services, and mobile spa services.
For more information, head to greenyogaspa.com or call 217-367-9642.
Good evening, CU community. You're listening to WEFT 90.1 Champaign. Welcome to In the Know, a public affairs show where social issues, trending topics, and relevant research and important perspectives are discussed so you, the listener, can be in the know. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the host and guests and not of WEFT. We're live streaming on my personal Facebook page. Listeners are welcome to submit comments on the live stream or really just kind of give us a chance to connect with our listeners. I know we have some LGBTQ youth who are listening tonight, who were looking forward to the guests who are on the show, because tonight we're going to be talking about transgender. These are three people I've had on the show before. I will let them introduce themselves, kind of give you the education on them, including pronouns, things like that. We'll start over here with Cameron.
I'm Cameron Hurley of Urbana, Illinois, and I go by they, them pronouns, and I'm a local trans advocate.
My name's Hayden. I'm a non-binary trans person. I use they or her for my pronouns.
I'm Aiden, and I go by he, him, his, and I am a trans man in the local community.
Awesome. So, you know, I wanted to do this show again because, you know, there were people who listened to the previous show and had a lot of questions, which is good. It's good when you have questions versus assumptions. But I think the one thing that kind of resonated with me was the youth who listened and just were so empowered by your stories because they felt like it's great to see people in the community who are willing to share their stories, to be, like you said, an advocate, to be kind of that face to a group and to work. And so, you know, just kind of wanted to give you guys a chance to, you know, share your stories again, you know, talk about some of the struggles, because I think that's really what a lot of the listeners related to. You know, they could understand those struggles of, you know, a parent not understanding, your friends not, family not understanding, you know, people who've been in your life forever, and all of a sudden you open up to them and to tell them something serious and they're not quite sure. But, you know, a lot of the youth were saying it's, you know, even more than that when they're talking about, for instance, one of my clients, I'm a therapist, one of my clients talked about how even, you know, systems that want to be accommodating think they're being accommodating, but they just scratch the surface. They don't realize how much more is involved with being able to, you know, accommodate this population. But, you know, kind of wanted to go back to what we talked about for a moment on the last show as far as, you know, people always say, I just don't get it. That's just so common. I just don't get it. I don't understand. Well, you never will. There's just no way you'll ever understand unless you're trans. But when people say, you know, how do you no longer identify with the gender that you're born with? What do you say to that?
I guess for me, I never really identified with it to begin with, so the change didn't really have to happen. I guess the only change that I dealt with was being so involved with the lesbian part of the LGBT community and shifting from that.
Okay.
But definitely gender-wise, it was kind of like a no gender, and then here I am, mm-hmm. a trans man. So gender, there wasn't really an identifier with a previous gender.
Okay. Anybody else want to share? So when was that moment and how do you define it? When people say, how did you know? Like you said, it was from the beginning.
I think for me, it was more of, I just realized that I didn't fit in with a lot of the females that were around me. And I knew that my birth was female and my parents dressed me in the stereotypical version of what that would be. And it made me uncomfortable and it made me feel like I wasn't quite myself. And when I finally knew who I was, it felt more freeing and I felt more like myself. And I wasn't, I didn't look at myself in such a negative light. And I was able to actually kind of piece things together little by little, the more that I realized how and what made me feel better.
Mm-hmm. Because I think some people have this misconception that, you know, you hear from a lot of parents, even when you're not even talking about trans, you're talking just about questioning in general, that this is a phase. They'll grow out of it. This is just a phase. So when you have parents, because that's a big part of the education that I know, especially having worked with, you know, clients now who have parents who are struggling, you know, when you have parents who say this is just a phase, you know, what would you want a youth to be able to, you know, understand about themselves to feel empowered to respond to their parents? What would you want, or even if you were having a conversation with a parent and they were saying it's just a phase, you know, maybe you understand or maybe you're more secure, but I think my child is just going through a phase. What kind of advice could you give to a parent?
I guess my advice would be, you know, sometimes phases do happen. That is a very real thing. Obviously being a butch lesbian was a phase. But I think self-discovery is a journey no matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, even though they may not understand what their child is going through, I would just encourage them to just be supportive, even if you don't understand, because while you may think it's a phase, and while it might be,
mm-hmm.
Having that support is incredibly important to raise a healthy child, period.
So. Mm-hmm. What kind of experiences did you have when you were talking to your friends and family when you first were questioning, or you had really, you had determined, no, this is actually the way it is? What kind of feedback did you get from them?
For me, oftentimes it was a lot of negative feedback. I lived in a very small conservative town, 3 hours west of this town, and the population was about the size of Urbana, and so the demographic there was very small-minded, I guess. And the way that a lot of people responded was just not understanding, and then when telling them what it was immediate refusal to believe it or immediate disapproval and disregard, and they felt that it was you know, a sin, and that like they took it to the side of religion, and that I didn't have faith, and it was just a very negative response, and very shutting out of who I was, or just even it, I didn't belong as a person anymore, let alone as an identity. So it was just very negative.
So maybe to kind of dial it back a little bit, so people understand what we're talking about. When we say transgender, what are we talking about? Because I think there are a lot of terms that have floated around over the years of that include that word, transsexual, transgender. So how do you define being transgender?
I guess for me, transgender is kind of an umbrella. So it's kind of this gender spectrum. There's no wrong or right way to be transgender. But most people use the descriptor of, you know, of your body being incongruent with how you feel,
mm-hmm.
In your mind. So I think any and all definitions that you have under that, you know, fall under that definition, whatever it means for you, mm-hmm. would fall under the transgender umbrella.
Okay. So that's something you both kind of go along with. So when we're talking about pronouns, because that can be very important, being able to use the appropriate pronouns, what pronouns are we talking about? Because I think people think that it's just him, her, that there's not this other spectrum either.
I feel like pronouns is something that you discover along the way. Some people have no idea when they first start where they're at or what they want to, who they want to be, where they want to be. And I think realistically, if you feel like you're male and you feel like he, him, his works, then that works. But I think that they, them, there is very like neutral. It's very middle of the road. It has nothing to do with more than what you want it to. And
okay.
It's a very easy way to just define yourself as an in-between, unless you know that it's, you know, a he or she or mm-hmm. something else.
So one of the questions that, you know, I remember somebody asking, and this is kind of similar to it. It says, what should I do if I make a mistake in pronoun usage with a trans person?
Ooh, this one's important.
Yeah. So usually what I tell people is it's okay if you mess up. As long as you, you know, correct yourself and keep moving forward like nothing happened. If you make a big deal of it, it tends to make the person uncomfortable. It's only going to make you feel more uncomfortable. So if you're just, oops, sorry, I meant he, moving on.
Okay. One of my clients was talking about how, you know, one of the things that's hard for him is to correct people. And he was saying that there was a situation he had at school where one of the more popular kids in class was working with him in a group, and the other student referred to him as her, and he just instinctively just said, no, it's actually he, without thinking about it. But the fact that, you know, you're able to educate somebody on not just what's comfortable for you, but I was telling him that it's not always the case, but sometimes you can get that person to maybe slow down and think before they use pronouns with people that they know are, maybe they don't understand completely what's going on, but it gives them a chance to kind of slow that down and before their assumptions.
I think the more aware.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, some people choose to have gender reassignment, but if they don't, are they still considered part of the trans population?
I think 100% yes.
Okay.
I feel that if you identify as trans and you say that you do, that that is valid in and of itself.
Yeah, surgery is definitely not required.
Okay, good. Because I think, again, people think that there's a checkbox that you have for these different, you know, ways you want to be identified. And if you don't check them, then, well, you're not completely trans, or, you know what I mean?
Well, sometimes that even happens within our own trans community. I mean, that a lot of people still hold that stigma and that, like, that hierarchy. You know, you are more trans if you are X.
Okay.
And that's not true at all. I mean, anybody can be trans and not have surgery or not be on hormones and not even desire those two things and still be just as valid.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, I mean, this is obviously not being able to answer for everybody in the trans population, but what would make somebody choose to do that versus not do it? Do you think part of it is a pressure within the community where they have to be a complete package, or do you think it's more, this is just specifically what I want for me and for my body?
If they chose not to?
Right.
I'm going to interject real quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it really depends on the person.
Okay.
So, like, for me, I chose to have top surgery, but I haven't decided whether or not bottom surgery. I know I want a hysterectomy, but for the next trans male, they may decide to, they definitely want bottom. They may not need top, and they may or may not want a hysterectomy.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, there are different surgeries, and you kind of just choose, like, okay, I do want this for myself, or I don't want this for myself, or I don't need this, you know, mm-hmm. To feel whole.
So one of the questions that keeps coming up, and I'm actually happy they ask it, is I have different friends and people I know who ask, is it okay if I don't know if somebody is male or female? And I just want to be able to know how to address them. Is it okay to ask that? You know, does that make the person on the receiving end completely uncomfortable to have to identify that way?
I feel like it can. Kind of depends on the person and how long you've known them, or if you're just meeting them. The situation is always applied, or you have to think about the situation. For me, I'm a very shy person sometimes when I meet, you know, people of authority or new people who I've never met before in a situation where there's lots of others. So, you know, it's also being mindful of who you're around, the kind of people or situations that you might put this person in order to answer freely. So giving them that comfort to say, like, well, it's okay if you don't want to answer, or, you know, if you don't want to talk about it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the pieces that I found online was, it said, you know, are children too young to know their gender? You know, when you have, I think there was, oh gosh, her name is Jazz. I remember seeing a bunch of different shows and people were saying she's just too young to know, but how would you ever know that if you're not her? And so that was one of the debates that happened where parents were asking, well, what if I want to know more about somebody's child? Is it okay to ask that parent? And the piece that I found, it said, you know, asking a parent about how they raised their child can feel invasive or confrontational for the parent, especially if the parent is still in their phase of learning about it and their phase of accepting it. You know, asking someone's child about their identity, so asking the child themselves, can also make them, you know, a little bit on edge depending on how their parent has accepted it. So, you know, it's good with people wanting to know. And I think the responses that I've received are, you know, find information, you know, the credible information online to help educate you about this. You don't necessarily have to go to the source because you don't know where they are in that process or that self-acceptance even. And so if you still can't educate yourselves and find out the appropriate ways to, you know, talk to different individuals, pronouns, things like that without, you know, having exactly to go to that person. So one of the things that, you know, you posted on your Facebook page, Cameron, which was just something, again, that even for those of us who think we're not necessarily educated, but familiar, and it's still something we don't think about, was when you were talking about how you get to this point in the process where you are able to, I think you used the word pass as, you know, a male. No one would ever question it. Nobody would even know that that's not your story. And you thought, but now I'm not able to identify as queer anymore. And that's important. You know, that's, again, part of your identity. And you were talking about using pronouns they and they. So what, I guess, when we're talking about this, why is that so important?
So going back to what I kind of talked about earlier, like not necessarily being able to identify with the lesbian community, I was definitely always seen as queer. I mean, instantly, as soon as you looked at me, you knew. There was no question.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really an attention thing. I mean, I am a Leo, so I do like attention. But it was more of a being seen as, I am a part of this community. Mm-hmm. It isn't always safe, you know, but it is something that I was very proud of. So I think I really chose, I mean, they, them feels really good to me. I mean, I still go by he, him pronouns too. I don't mind those either. But I guess when people are always using they, them, it kind of makes me feel a little bit more like, okay, I do belong in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very important for me to feel like I'm still a part of that, because you wouldn't know walking down the street with my wife that I was even any sort of queer.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you start talking to me, and then you're like, oh, well, maybe, but.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, when people talk about, you know, even acceptance within, you know, the community itself, is that something that you feel, I think you talked about it a little bit early, does that also apply pressure, you know, how you come across?
So for me, I am engaged to be married to a man. So in the trans community and the entire, I guess, societal point of view, I'm gay. And I don't necessarily identify as gay. I identify as pansexual, which is, for those who don't know what that means, it's essentially liking someone for who they are, or their characteristics or personality, more so beyond just the human body and the aspects of that. So who I fell in love with and am choosing to marry is a man, cisgendered. And how I identify does not match. So I also like women. I like other trans people. I like non-binary people, queer people. My sense of self is somewhat lost because to the community, I look gay. I'm just a man with another man. And even that in and of itself is hard too, because now I fit into an entirely different community that I never belonged in the first place to.
Mm.
So it's really hard, and it does lose its sense of where you find your purpose.
You, like, feel erased.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, your identity feels erased. So mm-hmm. in some ways, I'm the exact opposite of where Cameron is in his situation.
Yeah. So yeah, that's, you know, another question that people have is, how does all of this work once you transgender? You know, if you decide that, you know, you're transgendering from a female to a male, and then you decide you like women, where does that place you? Versus if you have the same transition and you like males, you know, there's all of, I think there's so many of those questions that pop up with people wanting to be considerate, you know, and how people identify, but they don't know exactly how it works, because I don't think there really is a one size fits all and by any means in this. And I think that's good. I don't think there should ever be a one size fits all for anything, because we're also very different. One of the parents that I talked to was mentioning their student was having a lot of this discussion and had kind of identified the same way as just being attracted to other people, not necessarily a gender and not necessarily based on what he had originally kind of been raised to be attracted to. And so he had mentioned the word non-binary to his mother, and she had no idea what that meant. So actually, maybe we'll have you guys define that. When we talk about non-binary, what are we talking about?
Do you want to? Okay, so I guess the way that I've always been taught is, so there's a binary scale between mm-hmm. male and female, right? Or typically there is a binary scale. So it's not fitting on that, in that binary. So either in the middle or both, or one day I'm more male, one day I'm more female. So it's kind of like, this could be fluid or it could be fixed, but it's definitely not always one side or the other.
Okay, so let's go back to some of those other words that you were using when you're talking about when it's fluid or it's fixed. Again, these are things I think people don't necessarily always understand.
Yeah. So, like, I know a couple people who identify as, like, non-binary but also gender fluid. So gender fluid is kind of like, one day they'll be like, I feel really feminine today. And then the next day, or maybe a couple days later, they're like, you know, I feel really masculine today.
Okay.
So their gender is fluid. It moves on that scale.
Okay.
And then fixed would obviously be, I'm right in the middle, or I'm both.
Yeah, okay.
Always one or the other.
I think, again, that's something that people don't always quite get, that there's that, even that option yeah. to be able to operate that way. Where, again, I think that's great that we have this opportunity to not only educate people, but help them to understand that this shouldn't be something that's uniform and static every single day, that right. there's the option for things to move along. Like you said, this spectrum of just how you feel every day. Yeah. You know, one of the people that I talked to who's trans had said, you know, it's so confusing because you want to be able to, this individual's transgendering from female to male, but saying, I would love to still be able to wear, you know, feminine clothing, but I think if I did that in this point in the process, they would think it was a phase, or they would think that this, you know, well, that doesn't match with what you say you're trying to do, which is to be a male. Did either one of you, you know, ever have, did any of you ever have that issue with people saying, okay, well, now you committed to this image, that's what you have to follow? Yay, we get to hear from Hayden.
Transitioning from being assigned male at birth to now presenting as a more feminine person, I was really pressured from the get-go that I have to wear makeup every day, and I have to dress really pretty, and I have to do my hair, and I have to shave, and I don't. Like, I started to at the beginning, and it's really exhausting, and kudos to anybody that does that on a regular basis, because I don't.
There are plenty of us women who don't do that, trust me.
I'm not a fan of makeup. I think it's uncomfortable. Like, mm-hmm. It takes too much time out of my day. I don't like getting up early. I'm not going to get up early to put stuff on my face. I'm really lax in the shaving department. Like, if you don't like it, don't look at it. And I, as a non-binary person, I dress in all sorts of different ways. I dress really feminine some days, and some days I dress more masculine. And some days I just wear a bunch of random crap and you have no idea what's going on because neither do I. And it took me a while to get comfortable with that. But it gets to the point where no matter, you kind of understand that no matter what you look like or what you're wearing, that automatically matches your gender. Clothes do not have a gender. Appearances don't have a gender. You don't even have to have a gender. Okay. I can wear a suit and tie and it's still going to be me. I can wear a dress and it's going to be me. Or I can wear a combination of both and it's still me. Like, it still fits me.
And I think that's an absolutely great message, because you have kids who, because they are exposed to so many different things now because of the internet, they have this opportunity to see that there's more than just what you're kind of the run of the mill is supposed to be. And I think some of them have kind of taken that approach of, I just want to do whatever I want to do every day. Why do I have to be so confined to something? And I think it's great that the LGBT community can really be the pioneers in that regard of saying, it's not even just for us. This is for everybody. Be who you want to be. Do what you want to do. That we, I think in some ways, like you were saying, we work so hard every day, sometimes maybe to be people we aren't. And it's so exhausting. And it's like, that's not even close to who I am. So to be able to share that and say, this isn't just for our community. This is part of what we want to embrace as inclusion for everybody. I think is amazing. You know, one of the kiddos that I know, he came to me because he just said my parents would never understand this. But he was saying, you know, it's not that I want to transition. It's not necessarily that I want to dress more feminine. He said, there are just certain things that I see when I go to the store and I'm like, I would love to wear that. And he's like, but I know my parents would never be okay with that. And he asked, is that normal? And I said, I think what we need to define as normal is that there isn't a normal anymore. We need to just get rid of that word altogether. That this is just who you are, what you want to do. Like you said, if you want to wear makeup, great. If you don't, who cares? You know, there's so many, yeah, just whatever you want to do. And then I think that can help with these ideas, you know, maybe even within and out of the LGBT community of, like you said, just loving people for who they are. It's not because I was born a female, so I should automatically love males. It's, hey, you're an awesome person. I like you for who you are. Kind of going back to a track show that I took my youngest daughter to, she recognized that the person she saw performing was a transgender male, but said, but he's still cute. Is it okay for me to think he's cute and like him? And I said, sweetheart, what does that have anything to do? You know what I mean? Like, this is you saying that what you see in front of you is what you enjoy. And so I think, again, there's that process that if we can teach parents to be more educated about this, not meaning that your child is broken by any means or flawed by any means. This is just us being inclusive and accepting everybody. I think we're much better off. What would you say were your biggest obstacles, though, as you were going through the process and just even coming to this point of self-acceptance? Because I think people automatically assume, because you know what's going on, that just automatically means that you accept what's going on with yourself, that there's no inner struggle there. But what would you say were your biggest struggles when you were going through all of this?
I guess for me, I didn't want to make any permanent decision that I thought later might not be what I wanted. And I second guessed myself a lot inside before I like took the big leaps that I did. Mm-hmm. So like with hormones and top surgery, it took me years to do both of those things just because I was like, well, everybody's telling me that this is a phase. Everybody's telling me that this is, you know, I'm going to regret this one day. Well, what if I do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I haven't regretted either one. So, I mean, going with my gut definitely served me best. But, I mean, for a long time, it was kind of like, well, what if everybody is right in telling me this? Mm. Then what am I going to do?
You know? Right. Yeah. But you knew for sure that this was okay.
Yeah, I knew for sure.
What about you two?
I feel like my biggest obstacle was that I had a very hard time trying to find other trans people to talk to communicate with, and obtaining things like hormones, and obtaining a doctor who was willing to understand and help treat me for what I felt I needed to be treated, which was, you know, understanding and caring and giving me access to things that they then could monitor and help me deal with. And in the area that I grew up, there was nobody willing. So I had to travel 6 hours from my hometown to Chicago for years to be able to have access to hormones.
Okay. So that's obviously an obstacle, just the medical field itself, right, being up to date and understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of my biggest obstacles was when I was really considering whether or not I was a trans person. Yeah, because it took me, gosh, probably almost 10 years to kind of figure it out. Towards the end, when I was getting really confident in my decision, I was really afraid of the person that I was with at the time, who identified as a cisgendered gay guy. I was really afraid that he wouldn't want to be with me anymore, because obviously I'd be going from what he wanted to the opposite. And that was a really scary thought for me. And I know a lot of people that struggle with that as well. They have a really big fear of losing the people that they love, especially significant others. And eventually it just kind of got to the point where I was like, well, if they really love me for me, then I'm still going to be the same person, and they should have a way to, you know, understand that. And if they don't want to be with me, cool. Like, I get that. That's your loss. I'm still going to grow without you, and I don't regret making the decision. I'm not with that person anymore, but for different reasons. And I'm okay with that. I've grown a lot, and I wouldn't take back any of my decisions.
So one of the things kind of along the lines of when you tell family, friends, those people in your networks of what's going on, is this need for them to understand how important it is to use not just the appropriate pronouns, but the correct name. So this was something that I even became educated about in the last several years, was what's called a dead name. So when we talk about a dead name, what is that?
A dead name is basically the name that you were assigned with at birth, differing from the name that you personally choose for yourself when you transition, or even beforehand. Like, I picked my name before I even started to transition, and that was kind of like the first step to me discovering who I was. And dead naming kind of really sucks. It can be really triggering for a lot of people. It causes a lot of dysphoria. Sometimes it doesn't. Some people don't mind it as much, but it's really invalidating to the person that you're dead naming. I know a lot of people are just like, well, that's what I'm used to. And I've never really understood that, because I've never had a problem switching names before. Like, it might take me a little while to get used to, but it's not that serious. Like, it doesn't affect me in any way. So I've never really got that. Like, just make an effort. Like, you'll be okay.
One of the articles that I saw online was, you know, talking about how important it is that when you're able to, even if you still have your own obstacles personally to get over, if you can be respectful to the individual and use the name that they've chosen, that it helps with depression and anxiety, like you were saying, because of that triggering, and how just vitally important that is, like you said, you know, to validating what they already are aware of with themselves. And now you're understanding. One of the clients that I was talking to was saying how that happens in school, that the teachers will call them by their dead name. And, you know, how do you correct that, especially when you aren't at a place where you feel empowered enough to speak up for yourself? And so you continually have this going on. But he was talking about how much he absolutely loves the fact that his art teacher has this form at the beginning of the year that says, here's your name, and here's the name you prefer to be called. I find it so funny that this wouldn't be something that we would do everywhere, because I did this at camps and all sorts of places for my two girls. You know, what kind of nicknames did they respond to? and how simple this would be if we did this at the beginning of every school year in every school, where we said, okay, here's your name. Maybe this is something you're, however we want to go with that route, but here's your preferred name. This is actually the more important part. How do you prefer to be addressed in class? We don't have to go into anything you're not ready to talk about, but this is just basically who you prefer to be called, and then adjust appropriately, because why would you not want your students to feel safe in your classroom and to feel like they belong? If it's one simple thing, let's not fight an uphill battle that has nothing to do with you and everything to do with what's comfortable for them. And even, like you were saying, even their mental health. When I brought this up at a trauma training I had recently, one of the people who works in the Urbana school district said that that would be an amazing thing even for her immigrant students, because many times they're called by the wrong names because people don't know how to pronounce them. And so even if we were able to spell it out phonetically for them, so the children can be called the names that they want to be called, how amazing would that be, just to set the tone from the beginning of the school year where they feel accepted? They feel like they are a part of that school because somebody took the time out to say, what do you want to be called? What is your preference here? You know, we kind of expanded on it a little bit more. You know, what if we had some type of orientation week for everybody where you were allowed to wear pins that say your pronouns that you want to use, have a name tag that says your name, be able to wear a rainbow pin, you know, be able to identify with whatever country you're from, where we just get off on the right foot and say, this is who I am. This is how I want to be identified. I would love it if you could just accept me for who I am. But again, it's funny that it's little things that I think that schools and districts and really offices could do to adjust. You know, my one client was saying that his mother recognized that one of her coworkers was transgender, and now he had an ally at his work. Somebody who knew who he was could help him feel more accepted in that environment. So again, you know, his journey is helping to educate his mother, and that's being passed on with her ability to work with other people like that. So what would you say have been some of the greatest moments within this transition process? You know, if you could say, hey, here's my list of all the amazing things that have made me feel so incredible about this, what would you say there? I'm sure meeting your partners has been awesome.
One of the biggest things that happened to me was a little TMI, but like my breast development, like that was pretty dope. It's been a long time, like, wondering if it was, like, if I was going to get any growth, because it varies upon person, and I decided to take the hormonal route, and I'm pretty happy with what I got so far. It's really empowering to, you know, wear a tank top, and people are like, oh, hey, and I'm like, hey, what's up? But on more of, like, an emotional note, I guess, was just kind of, it took me a while to get used to my new name, because obviously I spent over 20 years being referred to by my dead name, and then it kind of just clicks one day. Like, you hear it and you're like, wow, like that's me. Like, you kind of look around, you're like, wait, yeah, I know who that is. Mm-hmm. And it's really empowering just to go along that route and notice like the little things, and it just kind of like you get a little energy boost each time, and it just levels you up, and it's pretty dope.
Yeah
I think for me was the fact that I felt way more at home in my body after a while, and I Cam and I had a thing about beard hair. Yeah. For the first year I was able to grow a beard really well, and he was very envious of that. So it made me feel great that my body started aligning with what I really wanted to see. And I personally do fall more on a masculine side, generally speaking, but it made me feel more at home when I could look at myself and see what I really had envisioned. And I went and got a gym membership and started working out to be able to see more of what I wanted, and hormones definitely had helped me see that part of me, just because I felt more like myself. And it was a very positive point when I finally felt at home. Mm-hmm. It was like just a random day, and I found myself inspired by my own achievements.
Nice.
I guess for me so far after being with my wife would be definitely right after top surgery and seeing the results of that. was probably the best I've felt in this journey so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's one of those things where, you know, again, people don't appreciate it until they're going through it. They don't understand the things that they may take for granted, how somebody would be envious of being able to have that. And so it's good to have this perspective where people say it's not just about, you know, a name. It's there's this whole package that in your own mind that's defined and designed the way you want it to. That's the what really matters. You know, recently we had a day of silence for the LGBT community, and I wanted to read what one of the youth that I work with submitted. They said, "This day is for those of us who can't speak up when we get dead named or misgendered, those of us who get bullied for our sexuality and can't speak up for ourselves, for those of us who are alienated by our schools and can't do anything about it, when our binders are too tight and it hurts to inhale, but that's all I'm doing when you're calling me a girl. The smile falls and I don't say anything because you're a customer, a boss, a peer, a teacher, or my dad. I don't want to upset you because I fear the repercussions. This day is for me when I'm out in public and desperately have to go to the bathroom, but I'm terrified of multiple stall bathrooms, so I don't say anything because I don't want to inconvenience anyone. It's for me and my friends when the server calls us ladies and we can't correct her. It's for my friends who can't tell their parents they are or can't ask their parents to respect who they are. I love all of you. We aren't invisible and we aren't going away." I just thought that was so amazing. Again, because there's that power, you know, when they're talking about educating others. And, you know, that's the one thing when I work with my clients is to tell them, you know, let us support you. You know, those of us who are allies who may be able to push a little bit more for you to do these things, like having this paper at the beginning of the school year that says, "This is how I wish to be identified." Let us help you with that battle, because you are paving the way for the kids who are coming behind you, who are going to be coming into that school. And if it wasn't for the work you do, may not have been able, you know, to have that kind of comfort and inclusivity. So I think it's great when that voice is found. And they're able to use that. We also have some recent change with the Illinois Senate. They voted to require LGBT history curriculum to be taught in schools. Again, amazing. I was so excited when I saw that. When you posted that on your page, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So how did you guys feel when you found that out?
I was pretty excited, but a little concerned. Okay. I'm really hoping that they actually involve queer people in the curriculum.
Very good point.
Yeah, like, I want them to directly handle this, yeah, because I don't want it to be, like, cishet washed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure that I'm really concerned about a lot of the, like, queer people of color that helped pave the way for us and our movements. I want them to make sure that they are accurately and rightfully depicted and glorified.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little nerve-wracking. We're going to see how it goes. Hopefully they'll make the right decisions. And if they do, it's going to be pretty... had to refrain myself from saying something on the radio, but it's going to be great.
So what did you think? What did you guys think?
I mean, I think it's great. I think that's one step in a better direction than where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely leaning towards more inclusion and more understanding and educating, since that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to agree with both. I'm also a little worried that people are going to get left out, or that we won't be accurately represented, mm-hmm, in our history. So I think getting that right is very important. But I'm also going to say that I am excited, that because I never learned about anything queer in school ever. And next should be including it in sex ed, just putting that out there for the, yes, Illinois Senate.
No, I think that's where, you know, so again, this idea that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing for this community, and that only matters with how you do it. Not necessarily making the concession, which is really, it shouldn't be a concession. This should just be equality. But, you know, I was talking to one student. They were saying that transitioning from female to male, they wanted to be able to change in the boys' locker room. at school. And the school said, well, you can change in the office in the girls' locker room, and that should be enough. And they were saying, okay, so you're still not getting it. I'm not a girl. And so the school pushed back and said, well, we're not sure that the male PE teachers would be comfortable with you doing that. And so again, what are we, you know, this idea that we're moving mountains for you when you're not really doing exactly that. So I think that along with what you're saying with the education piece, you might say, okay, we've given you what you want. Now you're part of history. But are we really part of history? And what are you actually including? You know, you've seen this when you hear different people from, like even the Black Lives Matter movement talk about how they are inappropriately, inaccurately represented in history. And now you have what really should feel like this amazing stride in the right direction for the LGBT community. But like you said, what are we going to see? Who are you having write this history for us? I think it is great, but I'm kind of with Hayden on this. I'm cautiously optimistic to see what this looks like. And I would hope that, you know, they are willing to take the time to do this correctly, that they're willing to talk to the right people, to talk to people who have been very present and well-known in universities talking about this already. You know, bring them into those discussions as we do this, because we even have some amazing people right here on our U of I campus who've been willing to fight this battle, and hopefully get to pat themselves on the back with, you know, being a part of everybody else who's voiced who they are and said, this is who we are. We need to be known more than just in our individual communities. So what else would you like to see? I know you talked about like sex ed, but what else would you like to see as far as strides that the government can make? Because again, I think, well, we gave you marriage equality. What else are we supposed to do? So, you know, when you're talking about this education to the people who are listening, who, again, sometimes they take for granted the rights that they have, what would you want them to know and what would you want to see happen? Not even just on a state level, but a government, federal level.
For me, I would like to see that all trans people and or transgender working class can work safely. There are only a handful of the states out of the 50 that protect transgender people under law so that they are not able to be fired for that. And I am lucky, as many others, that when we work here in Illinois, we are protected by that. And I would really like to see that happen for the rest of the states, because it is incredibly important that you are able to be yourself at your work environment, where you're going to spend a lot of your time anyways, and be able to not fear being fired or discriminated against.
What would you two like to see?
I guess for me, I'd like to see positive bathroom bills pass nationally, at least if we're talking about the transgender community, for sure. Mm-hmm. And a plethora of other things like healthcare and, you know, all that stuff. But definitely start with the bathroom bill so we can at least pee.
Right. This is a basic need, okay? Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, when you talk about healthcare and you talk about, we were talking about trauma in one of our trainings. We were saying that the VA has been such a big group for trauma training because you have so many people who are coming out of the military who have that. So we need to see something similar to that in the education for primary, you know, whoever it is, you know, even I think those of us in the mental health field can benefit from more work with the LGBTQ population, because we cannot just keep compartmentalizing and thinking, well, this is just this nightly anxiety. Well, there's so much more than that. Or there's this nice, neat depressive symptom here, but it's so much more than that. And then when you're talking about, providers, I think your wife was the one who commented on the video saying that, you know, instead of your provider teaching you, you're teaching your provider and how much work that requires, because they're now at the very beginning of this education when this should have been, hopefully we can start seeing this become a part of their required curriculum, that they understand this, especially when you have parents who are taking their kids to pediatricians because they see anxiety or depression and not being able to recognize that that could just because this child is questioning, and it doesn't even matter if it's transition, you know, sexuality, gender identification, whatever it is, that could be such a big part of why they're experiencing this. So if you have a pediatrician, for instance, who's more educated, they can more appropriately address what's going on with that youth. And then the same, you know, colleges. McKinley, you know, our McKinley Health Center here, there actually is a provider there who has, I think, made a point of educating herself when it comes to the LGBTQ population, which again is great, but this is one center on one college, one campus. We need to have this be more of a, you know, national requirement. Because I think the more education people have, the more they realize that this, you know, somebody had said that, why are we seeing so many more transgender people? I don't understand this. And what it was kind of surprising, the one person in the crowd who I never thought would respond said, this isn't new. It's just people are talking about it more. Yeah. It's acceptable to talk about. And we have social media, so it's everywhere. He's like, this isn't anything that just came up yesterday. He's like, and he even said, there are so many things that are like that. But because we have social media, we see it more. But really, this has been here this whole time. And kind of, you know, what my youth was saying in his message, not only is this who we are, but we're not, you know, going away. He made the comment that in the class below him, he's like, there's all these, you know, kids, there's still these trans kids. And he's like, it's so great because that, you know, you have people who are finally comfortable to say, this is exactly who I am. So I think that's great. How would you say this was with going through the school system? Because I think that's, for me, a focus of work that I would like to do as a parent in the local Unit 4 school district. And so when I'm talking about educating, not just parents, but, you know, educators, you know, administrators, district administrators, you want to be able to have that candid perspective from those who've experienced it. So what would you say were your struggles then?
So I came from Unit 5 in Bloomington Normal, and I've kind of been on both sides of this fence. My high school going through as, I identified as a lesbian, but clearly that's not how I was in my head. So it was a literal nightmare. But after going through high school, I went back with my art teacher. Actually, it was kind of funny that you brought that up earlier. And we helped pass their bathroom legislation for that unit, or that unit 5.
Mm-hmm.
Bathrooms and locker rooms were definitely like the biggest struggle. I mean, like going off into a corner and changing and being away from everybody else, you know?
Right.
And that's not the only issue, but, I don't know. I just throwing that out there. Like it was, I can't even tell you, it was just daily, like avoiding, like holding it all day long.
Wow.
Like it was just like,
that's crazy.
Just weird stuff like that. Being bullied already for being a lesbian,
right.
Butch. So you're adding all this on top of what I'm already going through in my head. So.
Right. Yeah.
So, when I was transitioning in school, I came out to all of my teachers. Actually, I wrote them a letter, the first year of like 9th or 10th grade. And I'm from, Quincy, Illinois. So the school there that I attended was when I finally did know who I was. But they had no types of LGBT anything in place. No PFLAG, no any type of groups or anything supported by the school. And when I came out as trans, I did it solely just for the fact that I wanted to be who I was and feel protected, at least by the fact that someone else knew who is in some position to help. And so in a lot of ways, I felt like I kind of was the pioneer and shoved through that system.
We
talked to the school board and talked to all of my teachers, and I had two or three teachers who particularly just really loved me for being me and not caring who else was looking and watching. I left one summer as you know, my dead name, and came back the next year as Aiden, and my teachers were empowered because of how impressively new and refreshing that was for the district. And
we That's
fought
great.
A lot with the bathroom and locker room issues. Their compromise was just changing in the office of the PE education area and then nurse's restroom as, you know, a compromise. But I would really personally like to see it where they can go to the bathroom with everyone else and feel, you know, secure that that's safe.
Right. Yeah, again, the things that people take for granted that they have access to, then there's no question about it. Right. What about you, Hayden? What were the struggles with high school or wherever, whenever it was?
Well, I didn't start transitioning till way after high school.
Okay.
But in high school, I've been really queer for my entire life. First time I came out as like my first step was when I was only 12. So in high school, I was pretty comfortable with who I was. I was really flamboyant and I dressed really effeminate and I didn't care who saw. And I went to a really small high school here in Unit 7, just south of Champaign-Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very different for them. I was something that they had never really seen before. Mm. And I was loud and I had demands and I wanted things to change because there were a lot of other queer people there that were quiet.
Yeah.
And they conformed, and people used to come up to me and they're like, I don't know how you do this. Like, I would love to do this. And I was just like, do it.
Right.
And they didn't really, but I fought a lot to try to get certain things put into place to make it a more welcoming, comfortable environment. And I was always told by administration that I didn't know what I was talking about. There was not a need for it because I was the only person. I was like, but I'm not. You just
don't
run a tight ship like some Nazis and don't let people identify and express themselves.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem that I see with a lot of administrations, be it with schools or even on corporate levels, or local governments even. A lot of people don't take the word of the queer people that are trying to address the issue. Mm-hmm. They say that the problem doesn't exist and it's not really your place to invalidate what we're trying to tell you.
Right.
When we bring something up, you should sit down, listen, and ask questions after we're done speaking, because we are the ones that can help you get through this, and we have the knowledge that you don't have and you can't have, and that's not anything for you to be like ashamed about. It's just something that you need to accept and work on.
Right. No, and I think that's actually really great that you say that we're not telling you that you can't possibly know what's going on, but if you don't listen, you won't ever know. So I think that's a great parting message is just listen. Just open your ears and listen. Well, thank you to the guests for lending their voice to a very important topic. Again, this is not the only conversation we will be having. Thank you to the listeners for tuning in to In the Know on WEFT 90.1 Champaign. Tonight's show will be archived on weft.org under the Public Affairs In the Know page. You can also find it on my personal Facebook page. And then if you have any questions, I'm sure my wonderful guests would love to answer any. Again, we're all about the education piece. I will not be here next week. My youngest child is having a heart procedure done, so you will hear a rerun of a show. But we will be back in the following weeks to talk about the immigration population. Everybody have a good evening and make sure you stay tuned. We have upcoming Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7. Thanks, guys.
This is the manifesto of Mother Monster. On Goat, a government-owned alien territory in space, a birth of magnificent and magical proportions took place. But the birth was not finite, it was infinite. As the wombs numbered, and the mitosis of the future began. It was perceived that this infamous moment in life is not temporal, it is eternal. And thus began the beginning of the new race, a race within the race of humanity, a race which bears no prejudice, no judgment, but boundless freedom. But on that same day, as the Eternal Mother hovered in the multiverse, another more terrifying birth took place. The birth of evil. And as she herself split into two, rotating in agony between two ultimate forces, the pendulum of choice began its dance. It seems easy, you imagine, to gravitate instantly and unwaveringly